problem with it being late.
Okay, then I would suggest that we go ahead and Mr. Masson starts.
with the annual report, and thereafter we'll add more recent issues, and some of them will be reflected in the annual report in the meeting. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Madam Judge. And good afternoon, Honourable Portion of the Parliament, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Judge, colleagues, and with protocol observed, thank you to all. The presentation is going to focus on the following areas, such as vision and mission statement, overview of the mandate objects, organizational structure, and directorate legal services, directorate management regions, directorate support services. And under directorate legal services, we're going to speak on inspections, investigations, mandatory reports, use of force, and the number of internal and external complaints received per cluster. Then under the directorate management regions, we're going to talk about the ICCG post-establishment. Then under support services, human resource and finance. Our vision and mission, I'm not going to waste your time in terms of reading because we have done before. Then quickly go to slide number 5 that talks about what gave birth to the Judicial Inspectorate, which is Section 85, Subsection 1 of the Correctional Services Act, and Section 85, Subsection 2 of the Correctional Services Act that provides the object. The object of the Judicial Inspectorate is to facilitate the inspection of correctional centers in order that the inspecting judge may report on the treatment of inmates in correctional centers and on conditions of correctional centers. Judges won't speak much about the conditions of the facilities of the correctional center. Then we go to slide number 6 that talks about the organizational structure. Quickly, I'm just going to talk about the top part of it, which is we have the inspecting judge, which is Justice Honorable Dayden. Then the CEO currently, as the judge has introduced him, which is Mr. Vikash Misser. Then we have 3 directors. I guess I would have also to state that this is a structure as it is now, but going to change as we are heading towards restructuring and expanding our functions. Then we have the Directorate of Legal Services. The person who's acting there is Mr. Rada Umesh. Then myself, I'm there at the Directorate Management Region. Then quickly go to slide number 7 that talks about the inspections conducted. This, of course, it comes from Section 85 of Section 2 of the Correctional Services Act. This is the only strategic indicator that we report on regarding the annual performance plan, our APP. And we report under Correctional Services Program 1 called Administration. Our strategic objectives is to provide effective independent oversight relating to the treatment of inmates and the condition in the correctional centers and the PPP, which is private prison partnership. Then on 2015-2016, we have reached our target because we have targeted 81 centers to inspect out of the 243 of all the correctional centers, which all in all is 33%. This is because of the capacity that we were having. I guess for the past presentation, when I come here, I always lament in relation to the capacity that we are having. Hence, now we are embarking in terms of the expanding of the structure. If I may say again, we have only 4 inspectors who are doing such inspections nationally. But I guess that will be resolved immediately if we are finished with the new structure that will be probably approved soon. Then the period under review, which is 2016, also we targeted 81 out of 243, and we have performed very well by, of course, reaching our target. Then slide number 8 that talks about we have done 28 inspections conducted in the following management areas. These are the management areas per region. Management areas per region. I'm not going to call this, just going to jump quickly to the focus area. What is it that we are focusing when we do inspection, which is slide number 11. Slide number 11. Our focus area is on population and rate of overcrowding, specialist staff, structure and maintenance of facilities. As I said earlier, that the judge will speak much on this. Then the healthcare, rehabilitation, mentally ill state patients. Then we get into slide number 12 that talks about investigations. 17 investigations were conducted relating to the following. That is, we investigated an inmate on inmate assault, an official on inmate assault, unlawful segregation, and lack of adequate bed readiness, then inmate unhappy about eligibility for release on parole not being processed, unlawful cavity search of inmate and assault. Then we quickly go to mandatory. I guess before I can start with mandatory, I will also have to lament, like Jeremiah as usual, that we have the problem of the IT system in terms of reporting for this called mandatory report. So currently what we're doing it manually. DCS used to assist us in terms of the system. It belongs to them. So what we've been told that this IT system is broken and it's not compatible anymore, then they still have to assist us in terms of developing that system in order for us to report. So it gives us a very serious problem in that regard, because their reporting might be not correct. Oh, the mandatory reporting, of course, it comes from the statutory that's called mandate, that each and every death that takes place in the correctional center, then the correctional services must report. The segregation, the correctional center must report. The use of force, the correctional center must report to judge that they have used force. And also in that section, it states clearly that DCS, they are allowed to use force, but the force should be proportional to the objectivity that's there. Then also mechanical restraint. That in section 15, subsection 1 and subsection 2 talks about deaths in correctional centers, that the head of correctional center must, in terms of section 2 of the Inquest Act, report all unnatural deaths, as I say. And in section 15, subsection 2, any death in correctional center must be reported forthwith to the inspecting judge, who may carry out or instruct the national commissioner to conduct any inquiry. So we have in this period, we have 52 deaths from prima facie and natural causes was reported. The adjudication of the actual cause of death is often delayed for what of the medical legal autopsy and other scientific reports. These are the delay in terms of us reporting correctly. Then the suicide comprised of 27 out of the 52. 27 of inmates have committed suicide. Then we have flagged them in terms of the years. Of course, that shows the period under which we are reporting. It went down compared to the previous period of 2015-2016. In 2015-2016, it was 62. Then in the period that we are reporting on now, is 50-52. Then the natural causes, we have 497 inmates died. We have 497 inmates died from natural causes, and Gauteng takes the lead. As you can see in our next slide, slide number 15, where it shows that Gauteng had 127, and then followed by LMN, which 99, then KwaZulu-Natal, and Free State and Northern Cape, then Western Cape, and Eastern Cape. Then the use of force, as I have explained, that also this is enshrined in our Act, the use of force as per Section 32 of the Correctional Services Act. Section 32, subsection B, states that a minimum degree of force must be used and the force must be proportionate to the objective. Then Section 32, subsection B, the use of force must be reported to the inspecting judge, as I have said earlier. Honorable members of Parliament, this is, of course, troubling, and it gives us a problem that the use of force is escalating throughout the years. I guess you can see that. From 2010 to 2011, up until to 2016, 2017, instead of going down, it's busy like going up in that order. And it's so worrying. Then in relation to complaints received, we have internal and external stakeholders complain, and we have clustered them into this six clusters. And cluster number one deals with appeals, bail, and legal representatives. We have received 48. And cluster two, that deals with convention of sentence, medical release, parole, reclassification, ratification, and so forth. That is 97 received of complaints. Then cluster number three, that is communication with families and transfer, is 157, that was received. Then cluster four is conditions, food, and health care, that's 71 received. Then cluster five, element of violence, which is 298 received. And then cluster six is corruption, 21 received. Then when we go to slide number 18, that deals with the appointment of ICCV. As I said earlier, it's in the Correctional Services Act, which is section 92 of the Correctional Services Act. So, the appointment of ICCV, we have the 310 ICCV posts, and one body out of the 310, we have 243. And they are spread in that order in different regions, because we have four regions. That is the Central Management Region in Bloemfontein, and the one field is 61. Then we have the Eastern Management Region in KZN is 65. Then the Northern Management Region in Centurion and Pretoria is 61. Then the Southern Management Region in George is 59, and also I still have to explain or to say to the honourable members of Parliament that the George office will be relocated to East London. Okay. Then when we go to human resource, we have a filled permanent position, which is 63. Then the vacant is 5. Then those on contract, they are 17. And in terms of the equity, we have black males, which is 21, then the black female, 20, then the colored male, 9, then the colored female, 9, then the Indian, only Radha Umesh, 1, then the Indian female is 1, who is at Devon, then we have the white, 2, then unfortunately, you don't have a white female. Then when you go to the finances, which is slide number 20, the finances, the total budget allocation was 65,709,000. Then on compensation of employees, it's 57,780,000. Then on minor assets of less than 5,000, it's 883,000. Then on goods and services, we have 7,046,000. Then on budget expenditure, the expenditure for the financial year amounts to 42,195,401.40. JIX underspent by 35.39%, which is 23,113,598.60 of the total budget due to the following reasons. Number one, compensation of employee, we have underspent of 38% due to the delay in the appointment of permanent employees and the outstanding 80 permanent posts which were not filled. Then on goods and services, the allocated budget was 7 million, as I said, and the expenditure was 6,334,000, amounting to the cost saving of 711,000 of the budget was spent. Then on finance leases, we overspent by 3.107% due to insufficient allocation of budgetary items. Colleagues, I have come to the end of my presentation, and also I just want to say this to the members of Parliament that it was a privilege to me to present to you from all these years since 2013, I suppose. Yeah, 2013 under Judge Shabalala, and then after it was the late Judge Chweya, my present current judge. And I was exposed into experience in relation to addressing you and thank you very much, and that's it.
The judge said you are acting.
He was acting CEO.
And also,
but his permanent position is head of the region. Yeah.
Or head of the region.
And also in relation to that, I also just want to thank the ministry in appointing me twice to act in this position of CEO. Mm-hmm. Thanks very much.
Thank you. I suppose that perhaps we must finish our presentation and then we can have as much time as you have available for questions and discussion. Yes, the reason why Mr. Mamondo presented this annual report is because that during that period he was still the acting CEO. But as I said in the beginning, this report is actually now quite dated because it deals with a period ending 31 March of last year, 2017. So we'll come back to figures about staff and budgets and so on and give you a much more recent update. We are working on the new annual report, and I am promised by my people that we will not be late this year. It's normally submitted early September, and we will be ready any time from there. What we have submitted to you, and I'm not sure if it's here or not, but just to update you, I'm not going to discuss it in detail, but let me just say something about our reporting duties. The Act says the inspecting judge must report to the minister and the relevant parliamentary committee on each inspection, on every inspection. What we have done in the past, long before my time, is to compile the report into quarterly reports, which should then be done to the minister and parliament. Of course, if there is a specific thing that requires a specific inspection, of course, that requires separate reporting, we'll do that. But in order not to clog people's computers and desks and so on, we'll do it by way of quarterly the reports. In the past, some of the quarterly reports went missing. Somewhere before my time, a practice developed that we submitted to the National Commissioner of Correctional Services, and we could find later then that the minister said, I have not received a report from you, etc. So what we do now is we compile quarterly reports, we submit it, and we insist on an appointment with the minister four times a year. To physically give the minister the report. We may submit it before then, but we insist on a physical handover of the report. A meeting like that happened at the end of February this year, and there is one planned for the week starting 25 June this year. So what we have submitted to this committee now, and I don't know if you have it, but we, because we submitted it earlier, but again, since yesterday, we have, but I'm not going to talk about it in detail, so I just want to show you what it looks like. This is the quarterly report for the period 1 October to 31 December. You'll see it generally already at this stage, it looks a bit more colorful and a bit more readable. Now, I'll come to that. That's a major part of our rejuvenation. So this should be with you, and we handed this one to the minister. And I'll come back to that one for just one thing. Now, since Ms. Cupido joined us, we are working totally differently. So this is now our latest quarterly report, which is bound. The best part of it is she insisted on a very big picture of the inspecting judge, but it was not edited by me. I would have taken it out. But you see, it is properly bound, it is smaller, etc. So one of the things that we wanted, what we are doing, and you'll see our new annual report, we are trying to break away from this very boring, in my mind, report with lots of tables and figures and so on. We like to, of course, that information has to be there for the experts and for the academics to check up on everything, but we like to make it readable and physically more attractive. As you know, we have developed a new logo. We've developed, that was last year already, or soon after I assumed office. We have our own corporate colors. We discovered that we are actually not allowed to use the state coat of arms, only government departments may. but we are happy about that. So we are presenting everything in a more colorful, readable kind of way. I'm sorry that if you don't have colored copies here. So that's the quarterly report. However, what we are also doing, and I'll come to the substance now, but I had the idea in my head, and when we visited London last year, I was happy to see that that is the way they're doing it anyway. In addition to these reporting, this compulsory reporting, we do what we call theme reports. In other words, if violence is a theme, and not just a collection of separate incidents, then a theme with sort of systemic implications, then we will do a report on that. And one on violence is in the making. We actually had it almost ready, but it was based on a few specific incidents, and these incidents are a bit dated now, so we are linking it, we are making it, bringing it more up to date, and we are linking it to more systemic issues also with the National Prosecuting Authority and with the police. So one is on violence. One will be on facilities, and I'm coming back to that. Another one, which I'm not talking about too much right now, because we will see what comes out of it, because it may be sensitive, not only politically, but otherwise also, we are working on something, an international perspective, sort of, on this concept of Supermax facilities. We have only one in South Africa, Supermax Security, that's Ebongweni and Kokstad. I would like to leave it there. We will deal with it in a sensitive way, but because it internationally, the whole concept is controversial. We have been asked specifically by the minister to look into corruption, because the act says we must look at corrupt and dishonest practices. We are not quite sure always what it means, whether it means the smuggling of cell phones or whether it means a major investigation. We don't want to tackle something that we don't have the capacity. I'll return to that a little bit later. So these are the so-called theme reports that we are working on. Right. From the annual report, as Mr. Masonda presented, there's only one theme that I want to, he's dealt with it, but I want to stress the importance of it, and that is this mandatory reporting. The Act says the department, without us asking, must report to us on every death, for example, and segregation, etc. The system has collapsed. It's not in our control. And our people here, if you have questions about it, can give you more detail. But we can't get it. So we do it, as he said, manually. The system is not under our control. The system is with DCS. You are welcome to talk about it a little bit later, and we will have more information. Now, that brings me to the next thing. I'm sorry, I'm putting my presentation together here from different documents, but I'll try to separate the themes. Okay. Next thing, independence, because the mandatory reporting leads to independence. And I believe that at previous appearances here, the issue of independence was raised. Let me just tell you the legal framework. The Constitution does not mention JICS directly. So we're not in the same position as the public protector or whatever. The Constitution does, of course, talk about the basic rights regarding detention, etc., in Section 35. And the Constitution does strongly emphasize human dignity. We are a creation of the Correctional Services Act. Just one small chapter of it, clauses, about 12 or so clauses in the Correctional Services Act. That Act states that the JICS is an independent office under the control of the inspecting judge. That's what it says about independence. But of course, to say to use the word independence does not make one independent. Independence can mean many different things. And as a judge, I always say that it starts within one's own mind. It starts within speaking for myself, whether I am independent or whether I'm trying to please somebody for whatever reason. But it goes beyond that, of course. No matter how independent I am, but I need resources. Courts cannot function. Nobody is completely independent. The Chief Justice's salary is paid by somebody. He's not earning it on his own. But not even the Chief Justice and the Constitutional Court, of which I was a proud member, can function without laptops and computers and somebody to clean the court and somebody to unlock the doors and so on. So we are talking about two levels of independence. The one, interference, political or otherwise, the other one, capacity. I don't know if you know, but there is litigation going on. An NGO, the Sonke Gender Justice, the same NGO that won the case here in the Cape, in the Western Cape, about the overcrowding of poles, to which I will return later. But that same NGO is in an advanced stage of litigation against the state. They want the Correctional Services Act, or at least those parts dealing with JICS, to be declared unconstitutional and invalid. The president is the first respondent. The minister is the second respondent. The national commissioner of Correctional Services is the third respondent, and I'm the fourth respondent. So not the first time, but one of the very few times that I found myself as being a respondent. I won't talk about the other time. So our position, let me just tell you what the argument is. The argument, but because we're not mentioned directly in the Constitution, the argument is a little bit complicated. They start by saying the DCS Act, the Correctional Services Act says independent. What does it mean? Then they go to the Constitution, to the basic rights of indignity and the rights of detained persons. Then from there they go to international law, of course via the clauses in the Constitution that invoke international law. And then they say we are not independent enough. Some of their arguments between us are not very good. Some of their arguments are a little bit, too formal. However, the interesting part of this is, since early last year, the lawyers for the presidency started to convene meetings to discuss the strategy of the four respondents. Now, our initial response was simply we abide by the court, but we will file affidavits to tell you what our experience is. But somewhat to my surprise, there was unanimity amongst all four respondents, or at least their lawyers, that actually we should work on our independence. I won't say that the applicants are correct, because, like I said, some of us are not convinced of the legal force of their arguments. But there was unanimity that one should work towards more independence for JICs, from the presidency down to every level. So the number of meetings have taken place. Answering affidavits have been filed. Songcare, we asked them initially to wait a bit because we're working on it. Eventually they said we're not going to wait any longer, and they are now waiting for a court date. And they have just sent out a notice to invite Amiki, other NGOs or whatever, to join the proceedings. Now, quite briefly, what our situation is, I expressed in my affidavit my views about independence. But we tell the story of our frustrations, and I'm not hiding it. It's right there. We discussed it. The initial response, for example, the commissioner at the time, National Commissioner Mudise, his answer was simply, I want the judge to be independent so that he can stop bothering me. Bothering means having to write to the commissioner, walk into his office to get a letter, stuff like that. So I reserve the right, as I've told the applicants, that depending on how the other things unfold, that among other things that we're going to talk about today, we may file a supplementary affidavit at a late stage. So to get back to the independence there, politically, I can quite honestly say that I have not experienced any obstruction from this present minister, deputy minister, or this committee, or its chair. I understand that there is sensitivity about some points, but minister has said a number of times openly in front of the senior DCS management that we should do our job, there is nothing that should be covered up, etc. Deputy Minister was the first one to encourage me that we must lift our public profile. That, of course, can change from day to day, depending on the individuals. So I have not been able to detect any political agenda of cover-up or don't embarrass us or whatever. However, on a financial level and an administrative level, we are sometimes really struggling. Now, I forgot to ask in the beginning, is there somebody from DCS here today?
Yes.
Because I would like not to say things behind people's backs. I asked my office to communicate. I know your committee did send out an invitation to the ministry, but I asked for an invitation to DCS and also the Department of Public Works. Let me leave small things like laptops and so on, and move to the next point, and that is our budget. What you saw here was the previous budget. This year, we, based on our, what do you call that? Based on our projection, this one I want to explain this. I'm not a financial person, but let me try to explain it. We asked for 72 million, based on our projections. They gave us 71 million. The explanation for that is, I'm talking around, that there was a general budget cut of 2.4% or whatever, across all departments, partly because to make up for the for the assistance to students.
February, we saw on our screens, not 71, but we saw that we get 51 million. I started to send SMSs to people in correctional services as to asking what's going on here. The answer from a very senior official was that it is the general budget cut. I said, but how much is the general budget cut? The official said he does not know. Then we met with the minister and the acting national commissioner and the CFO. Then the CEO indicated that this was an error and it had already been corrected. Be that as it may, we are dealing with 71 instead of 72, I'm rounding. Now, that is fine with us. We do not expect, if there is a general cut across the board, we don't think we should be exempt for it, from it. But the part that puzzles us, and the CFO, perhaps, Minister of the day we met was a bit rough with the CFO, and so much so that I later tried to defend the CFO, but because I do not always understand what the CFO explained, and I ascribe it to my own lack of financial insight. But what then happened, and here Mr. Misser can help me, when you would have seen in the budget Mr. Masonga presented, there are two main items. The one is so-called goods and services. The other one is compensation. Goods and services, in short, is the petrol that you need to drive to prisons to inspect, things like that. Not the purchase of the vehicles, I'm coming to that, but our operational expenses. Compensation are salaries. We've got some positions, I wanted to just tell you, if I may deviate for a second, we are in a much better position than we used to be. And we have an organogram included in our one quarterly report of all our positions that are filled now, etc. Positions like Mascopedo here, some of these positions are new. We are much better than we used to be 2 years ago. However, we have some positions that we can freeze for a while, not full, etc. So we say, please leave it to us to decide how to absorb this 2.5 cut. We can do it, like everybody else has to do it. But what DCS did, apparently, and I keep asking for explanations, and if I'm wrong, I apologize in advance, they decided that this entire cut must be absorbed by goods and services and not by compensation. And they did not ask us, they decided unilaterally. How it was done exactly in the past, I don't know. But what this means is that we sit with money in compensation without people to pay the money to, or if we have people, but we could have saved it. Whereas our operational budget, in my simple words, our petrol to drive to the prisons, has been cut from 8 million to 6 million. 8 million is not a lot, but now it's 6 million. We don't know why. We don't know why our operational budget, and we don't know why we cannot decide ourselves how to absorb the cut with which we agree. That is our one problem. We can talk about it later again. Let me then move on to the issue of the facilities. I mentioned theme reports. People like to talk about overcrowding. I'll come back to that. People like to talk about violence. But there are other issues that are less dramatic on the face of it, but very, very serious. And a few weeks ago, while we visited prisons in KZN, like Stanger, and later, because of what I heard, we took a special trip to Elliotsdale, to our East London office people, or now still George office, visited Umtata. I've heard lots of stories now about other facilities. We are very worried about the state of some facilities. We are busy working on a full report on facilities, which we will bring to you. But I thought we should perhaps mention it to you and share one of the reasons for our urgency is because it is winter. And let me, I'll come to that part. By the way, one of our people, the ma'am across me and others, one of our people in the George office says we must touch the hearts of the mothers on the committee. Some facilities are new and in good shape, others not. We have seen facilities, Mr. Peter has slides, maybe I must just finish saying, and then she can, or I don't know if she has the slides right here. Can we bring them on right now? Or show the slide and I will add the story. But we have seen facilities where the ceiling does not at all comply with the regulations. Yeah, it's okay, she will let me know when she found it. Because people can escape, some cells apparently have to have concrete ceilings and others not, depending on whether we're talking maximum or medium or whatever. But you will not believe me that I tell you that there are facilities where the ceiling is so dangerous that the way to counter escapes is to take away beds. So people sleep on the floor on mattresses so that they cannot reach the ceiling. This sounds absurd because I don't know whether an inmate cannot think of climbing on another inmate's shoulders. But this is literally what we've seen. We have seen kitchens where a JIGS report of 3 years ago, the kitchens, Mr. D'Souza can help later, but the kitchens have to have a certificate of compliance. I'm not sure if we get it from the health department or where they get it. But before they're supposed to serve food. We have some situations where 3 years ago, Jig says that this kitchen doesn't have a certificate. And then everybody says, yes, we agree, it must be remedied. And then the tender goes out, and now 3 years later, there is no kitchen. And the tender is not even where it was 2 years ago. It just disappeared, or somehow, it just, I don't know what happened to it. So we have a number of kitchens where the floors are cracked. The kitchen floor is very important, by the way. It must be tiled because you must be able to clean it properly because germs hide in the creases and in the... So we have a number of kitchens. Don't we have, Mr. D'Souza, a kitchen in Springbok that burned down a few years ago and has not been rebuilt?
Many years ago,
and people actually make food now in pots in Poikos or something, or Papota or something. Floors... Yeah, she'll get it just now, we'll show you. Let me just talk in the meantime and then we can just show you a few slides. Don't bother as soon as she has it. Floors, I must be fair, not in maximum, but in some medium facility like Stanger. The courtyard floor is made out of concrete, the stick, 6 inches thick. But it breaks up. So you can simply pick up a piece, break off a piece if you need a weapon, and then you have a piece of concrete supplied there, right there, by the prison. There are numerous other examples. Let me give you a bit of irony. One of the state-of-the-art facilities is Tswelopele in Kimberley. Tswelopele is state-of-the-art. It cost many, many, many millions. I forgot the figures. So many millions that the equipment is very advanced. So advanced, sorry that I'm sarcastic, but there's no hot water. There is no hot water because the explanation we were given is nobody can repair the water pump system because it is too sophisticated. It is so sophisticated that I don't know some people when I, sorry for the word, but when I tell some people the story, they say, no, this is a cock story. It's not the real reason. But we are told by the head of the center, who is a few months away from retirement and speaks quite openly, that engineers have to be brought in from Johannesburg, and at some point we even heard from the United States to repair the water pump system. A little bit more ironical, you know the issue of separation, single cells, etc., overcrowded communal cells is controversial, but it is not in our state-of-the-art facility in Kimberley, because the single cells are empty, and the reason why they're empty is because the doors cannot lock. Because they don't work with keys, they also work with a sophisticated computer remote kind of system, and nobody can repair it. Okay, where it becomes a bit more crucial, we will see the pictures, is not only, or let me, before I come back to this, let me just say the same, basically, you would have seen from the letters I wrote to the committee, the same, similar frustrations apply to our own offices. And for that matter, some of the DCS offices. Our attempt to secure accommodation for the head office and northern region have been going on from when I was appointed, and it is not a step closer to resolution. In fact, it is a few steps back. I'm talking about a process of identifying, tendering, etc., etc. This has to go through the correctional services to public works. So correctional services helped us by saying you can have the 33rd floor of the Poynton building in Pretoria. 33rd floor has an absolutely wonderful view. On the one side, over my ancestors, the Voortrekker Monument, my ancestors were in the Cape when that happened, but anyway, on the one side, a wonderful view over the Voortrekker Monument and Freedom Park. On the other side, a view over the ground, the sports areas where a person I sentenced to 9 life sentences, a serial killer buried all his victims. So a wonderful view, but in order to get there, for me, as the inspecting judge, certainly could take 20 to 30 minutes from the parking space to the office, and the same way the other way around. I've mentioned it to everybody. I wrote a letter last week because I'm seriously concerned about the safety of people, not myself. The effect that it has on me is that halfway through the city, I turn around and I think I just don't have time today to spend an hour waiting for an elevator. Only 5 elevators are supposed to reach the 33rd floor. Only one does. And that one, sometimes the size of this part of the table, sometimes has 16 people in it. And then it gets stuck. And then pregnant women complain that they are going to faint. And I just fear for somebody with a heart problem and now I'm not talking about chicks. I'm talking about the DCS people who crowd the entrance in the morning just to get to their work. So we've been told all kinds of stories about the elevators will cost many, many, many millions, and it's the mistake of the landlord, the owner of the building, etc. We are now going to move, and hopefully perhaps early July we'll be in there. The ministry gave us temporary accommodation. Now we're going to move into the Salu building, 2 floors in the part belonging to the ministry, which we very much appreciate. So it's not us that I'm talking about here. What I am talking about is there seems to be a block that I am unable to understand between DCS and public works. Now, perhaps you hear the same story. Yeah, let just wait a second. Perhaps we hear the same story from other departments. Perhaps the health department and the education and the schools and so on say the same thing. But it is inexplicable to me why things do not get done. Wherever you ask, DCS blame public works. And let me just tell you on this, at this particular place, which we'll come back to now, it's not the inmates who are complaining to us. It is the DCS officials, the DCS staff who have to work there. It's grim to say it and cynical, but perhaps the inmates, perhaps it's not all that much different from the poverty in which they have to live anyway. But it makes people's work very, very difficult. So Ms. Capito will show us a few slides. Sorry to take your time, but I think this is important. Where is this? Maybe you can tell us where it is.
Tanger.
That is Tanger, okay. That is where the concrete breaks up for a while, and one can use it for weapons. That's housing unit number. Just go a bit slow. Yeah, that's the, what's that? The cell door. Yeah, okay, that's the Tanger prison. Yeah, sorry, it's turned it. Okay, sorry, but you can see you're getting it well. Okay? Can you replace it? Okay, speed try.
Down there.
No,
it's
featured this way. Yep. Okay, there we have it. Alright. Okay, that is Daniel. Yeah, go on. We don't have to spend a lot of time on it. Sorry, now you have to turn it again. Okay. I think this is the courtyard which I'm talking about, with the concrete on the sides can just be broken off in sessions. I think those are the people who went with us on the inspection, and some of the officials. Yeah, go a bit slower, otherwise it will, yeah, you can see it. Okay, John, Peter's in charge. Okay, well, hang on, this is for the shower. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
No, not so bad on the face of it. Of course, the cells on the inside. I would grab the cell. Rain coming through the doors. Okay. There are buckets for water, I think.
Listen, you are leaking.
Because of leaks.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I'm not saying I remember, okay? Yeah. And some of them have done very good work in this regard. I don't know if it's the emphatic cash or some kind of a smallish budget that they have for maintenance.
It's a day-to-day.
Yeah, that's mold going on the wall.
And those are the buckets that they use for water. Some use it for water.
To wash
in. And some of it is used when it rains.
Yeah. Okay, can I interrupt with one? I mentioned that there's some places no hot water. There are, of course, places with no water as well.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Toyandu, where we were last year, early last year. Toyandu has two boroughs, or one borough, but that's not enough because of the number of people. They also get water from a reservoir in the village, but the village is cut off the water because they say they don't want criminals to have their water. So what happens in Toyandu, and there it was directly related to violence, is that there is water for 40 minutes or so in the morning, and then again in the evening. Now you can imagine an overcrowded prison catching up some of the overcrowding from Polesware or whatever, with people speaking different languages and so on, who have to all run to the shower at the same time. Serious potential for violence, and there has been violence in that regard. Okay.
This is
by a
kitchen.
Yeah.
Where they're also
Of course, we have seen some very good solutions. I want to be fair in this regard. Yeah, that's the kitchen. That's about all you can say. Now, Mr. D'Souza will tell you, Elliot's Dale is on the verge of
collapse.
It's worse than this. This is still
playing.
Maybe you move to Elliot's Dale, I think. Okay, we have that. Okay. Do we have the one about the shoes and the uniform? Okay. While she's finding that, let's skip all these building pumps. The one why I say it's urgent, because it's winter. Of course, it is urgent that there's no hot water. But more urgent is, and correctional services here, please, if they're here, correct me if I'm wrong. Please correct me if I'm wrong. But what we are told by correctional services officials, and I might just say that officials on the ground, we are found very, very helpful, the way they speak to us. I don't know what they do before we get there, but the officials on the ground, the heads of centers, have been very helpful. And in fact, they rely on us to help them. Back to political interference, we've had one or two incidences in KwaZulu-Natal where our people were actually denied entrance, and denied entry into a place by the regional commissioner.
Where?
KZN. and we, I can talk more about that, and where we have been denied access to the documentation, even documentation that were promised to us. But that's another topic that relates more to independence, etc. While you see that, as we move on, there seems to be a shortage of prison uniforms. Now, as you know, perhaps by now, that the trial awaiting people are supposed to wear yellow, sentenced inmates orange, women a kind of a blue, sentenced men orange, women a kind of blue, people working in the kitchen white, and the guys in the supermax in Ebongweni red. How does that one look for a shower? Where is that?
That is a shower.
In? Where?
Is
still Stango?
It's
TV.
It's all right.
That's
just
an example of there are no beds there. That is what
they
keep
on. Yeah, that's where they worry that they will escape through the field.
What?
There's where they can help themselves with concrete blocks if they need it in a fight. I don't know if this is humor or cynicism, but I always like an undermining sense of humor, but I'm not sure that is everywhere. The bottom line that I wanted to say about this is the shortage of uniforms, but the shortage of uniforms, if we can get to Elliot, though, we apparently get very cold, is that there's no shoes. We have a slide somewhere about what prison shoes should look like. It's big black shoes, and we have a slide or two if we can find it. But then you will see where the inmates are lined up, what they wear, which comes from their families or from the local pet store or I don't know from where. But these are sandals, in women's sandals and old peppies, etc. Somewhere with a line of people. We have too many to show you that was early was that last month or early June? It was just before when that was just before winter was here, Syria. Okay.
Oceans.
Yeah.
That's their oceans. Yeah. Somewhere we took one of what the proper shoes look like, but anyway, you can assume that these are large sort of shoes. Oh, by the way, some of the guys who have the shoes, the proper shoes, get it by going to the local whatever, where they pick it up when others throw it away, when they get released. Then they pick it up, I don't know where, inside or outside or whatever. Now, to conclude on this topic, you asked what about recommendations. We don't know yet because we aren't ready with the report, but we wanted you to be aware of it. It is our own building, it is facilities, it's clothing. Where the blockage is with the clothing, I don't know. I'm not sure if public works are involved in that. But it is an ongoing refrain with kitchens, etc., that public works is not good. And we have our own frustrations with our office, with somewhere between DCS and public works. So, Chair, one of the things we have been considering to do, sorry, this one doesn't go on anymore now. I don't know, maybe you can hear me anyway. And we would actually like to hear your views on it, if not today, then at a later stage. The Correctional Services Act gives the inspecting judge the power to have hearings, public hearings. And the Correctional Services Act says that once the inspecting judge does that, certain clauses of the Commissions Act apply. So we would have the power to subpoena people. Whether we can afford it financially, I don't know. We have not worked out all of that. some people say that we can open a whole can of worms involving corruption on a high level with regard to the building of facilities, etc. Steel fences. I mentioned Toyandu. Another problem at Toyandu, for example, is there's no fence around it. So the villagers walk through the prison and they pass dacha and stuff through the windows between the bars. And then, of course, there may be fights for possession of the dacha, but the real trouble comes when the officials come in and they do searches. One of our cases of violence, head injury, this reminded me a little bit, those of us who are old enough, of the apartheid days, when people on their own jumped out of buildings and killed themselves and so on. Head injuries, the version of the officials is that they search people, and this guy was so desperate not to be searched that he ran with his head full on into the iron bars, and therefore injured himself. The version from the other side is that when the officials come in, that you know that they have perspex or plastic shields, which is electrified, they can switch it on or off. The purpose, of course, is to defend themselves, which they often have to do. Some of the attacks on them are very vicious. But that they do switch it on before they push people into the shower with it, which, of course, you can imagine, electricity plus water, etc. So, but much of that is started by the fact that dacha ends up in the cell. So, let me, before I come to the to a possible recommendation, this of course is closely linked to overcrowding. What is the overall figure, percentage overall? All right, we have 243 centers, we have 162,000 inmates, 16,000 of them serving life sentences. We, on average, can visit a facility with our capacity once every 3 years. Can our inspectors reach it? We rely heavily on judges to help us. So that's why we are actively not recruiting, because part of what they're supposed to do, but judges are very, very busy, but we are actually trying to encourage judges to do it and to coordinate it with us, that they don't visit the same place. So the overcrowding is serious. It's not, there is no overcrowding in the two private facilities, privately run facilities. The one in Mangaung in Bloemfontein and the other one? Right, okay. And there is also no overcrowding in Ebongweni, the supermax, because of the particular nature of that. Overcrowding, you can see this, the facilities mixed with overcrowding, mixed with gang activity, mixed with corruption, which you will find anywhere in the world. I'm not saying ours is more. On this level, where officials get paid very little, where officials that I know, one who drove my car last year was scared to look after Mr. Cratchier during the night, because the temptations will be irresistible. For using your cell phone for half an hour, you can buy a new BMW or put your children to school and so on. So those kind of things we think exist everywhere. But this mixture of overcrowding plus the gangsterism plus the corruption on that level, plus the facilities, is a very, very, very deadly mix. Overcrowding, I don't know what the answer is. I heard this morning Mr. Raga reported that at a meeting about parole, etc., somebody is going to suggest to the presidency a massive amnesty. It will have to be hell of a massive to relieve this problem. Out of every 130 people, they will have to release just more than 30, otherwise it will be overcrowded the next week again. So there are a lot of discussion about overcrowding and whether people should get more bail and so on. We can talk about that separately. Our impression is that the department doesn't mind that we point out overcrowding, because it is their problem also. They actually, that is one of the reasons why things don't always happen correctly. So the overcrowding is a problem. mixed with all the other things, it is very, very serious. It is serious for escapes. It is serious for the safety of the inmates. It is serious for the safety of the wardens who work there, the officials. And of course, it is serious from a personal point of human dignity. Again, let us be fair. We don't have money to travel abroad. Last year, when I attended a conference in Portugal of an international organization aligned to the United Nations, of which I became a member, I was recommended by a previous respecting judge. A conference where the title was 100% to the point of our work, namely the treatment of mentally ill patients. The organizers paid for my ticket and accommodation, but because of the complexity, it took place in the Azores Islands. We needed to upgrade the ticket, and we needed one extra. Now we needed, to make a long story short, we needed 11,000 extra. The CFO of DCS denied it. He said because it will exhaust our travel budget. So what he said is, rather go to a place that we would like you to go than to a conference in Portugal. At the moment, I owe that personally because we got an outside travel agent. I personally owe the 11,000 at this stage. back to what can be done about this. We are concerned about the interference in our budget. We accept a budget cut, which everybody has to accept. We do not understand why the CEO or anybody must decide that we must rather use less petrol and therefore not visit Toyandu than appoint person in a job which we do not regard at the moment as crucial. We don't understand why there are a shortage of units. There is a shortage of uniforms and shoes. And perhaps I'm unfair to telling you this without asking DCS, but we speak to their officers on the ground all the time. Some of us now say to me, I'm on the verge of retirement. Can I come and talk to you? The old issue linked to public works, I am perplexed by it. I am a judge, therefore I don't speculate in terms of rumors of corruption or whatever. I would like to see that. I don't want to say it's the case. I can just mention to you that when I discussed these problems with the head of IPED, the first answer would be that it is corruption and that there's proof of it, but I don't have that proof, and none of us have as it here. So what we are considering is this issue of public hearings. But we would like to have your view on it. Perhaps you could have it in Parliament. Perhaps the we would need money to do it if we didn't budget for public hearing. So what we don't know yet, we haven't figured out all the financial consequences, but we don't know if we subpoena a regional commissioner from either KZN or Western Cape, whether we have to pay for that person or whether the department will pay. We haven't figured out those details yet. What we also don't know is whether we will be able to contain this thing with our limited capacity, should it become big. And Chair and members of this committee, you must really, I won't say appreciate, but I ask you to understand that I say this to you in the spirit of complete openness. We specifically asked my office several times, but including yesterday, to ask Public Works and DCS to be here. I know your committee invited the ministry. I'm not talking behind anybody's back, but we need you to fulfill our mandate. And I suppose that is enough for now. I've mentioned to you, last one to me, I said we visited other prisons, not very many, but I saw a prison in Portugal where the place was empty because they made it very nice for us to visit and nobody believed it. I saw the Angola prison in the United States. The state of the prison is fine, but I was shocked by the sentences. They give people a sentence of life without parole, so you have people who spend their whole life there educating other people, helping them, but they will never come out, which will be unconstitutional in South Africa. I was in the death chamber where they inject people to kill him. Fortunately, they were not active on that day, but it is a grisly, morbid experience. So we have a lot to be thankful for. Pictures I've seen of prisons, not only in South America or other African countries, but in Russia, for example, a women's prison, which I saw at that conference, by the way, it looks worse than a Nazi concentration camp. So we have a lot to be thankful for. We are by far not the worst in the world. But we have a constitution, and we have a mandate, and you guys are overseeing it. So I don't think our standard must be only to say, well, we look a little better than people who just disappear into Guatemala or wherever, and are never seen again. But one of the good things I can say is we see our correctional services people seem to have very good records of everybody. So there's no disappearing into a dark hole until your family can bribe a lawyer to bribe an official. We have not seen that. They can tell you exactly how many people were locked up and who's where and so on. That seems to be fine. But these are some of the problems that I've highlighted now. So I don't know, open to questions, or if maybe my people, I don't want to speak too long. I'm done, unless it's open to the I think the computer. That's why we don't go.
I think our starting point, this goes on my thread, so it's not only the prison. No, I think the starting point should be, has to be political oversight over what is because I'm happy that you invited the DCS. There must be political oversight. Those regional commissioners, the director general, must be reporting to the minister and deputy minister. So that even before you go there, they should be having some information of what is working and what is not working. Because when we talk about the budget, that budget must be informed by the realities on the ground. Secondly, there must be parliamentary oversight by ourselves. And we have been criticized, we are being criticized, that we neglect correctional centers. We do so because then amount of legislation that comes from the department is impossible for us to deal with, so that we have no space as the parliamentarian to go out there and do any political parliamentary oversight. But also we believe that we are not the executive. We do not want to co-govern. We don't want to run any ministry. We have no ambition to run any ministry. And the fact that we have an inspecting judge also means that we also don't want to do the work of the inspecting judge. Now, it is quite clear from your report that there are failures from oversight, political oversight, parliamentary oversight, for the reasons I've stated, and now the only area we can rely on is yourself. And it is quite clear that you have done your work to the best of your ability. And personally, I don't think that the story of public works should be used as a scapegoat, because the public works is a service provider to all government departments. And I'm not even sure that that public works is capacitated enough to you know, meet the demand on it. But if we were to assume for argument's sake that it's public works, we would expect that when DCS appear before us, they come here and say, these are our challenges in the correctional center, and now we are let down by public works, so that we can tend to the responsible people and say, your public works is not delivered. But this information does not come to our attention. So it means that it would not be enough to say it is because of public works. And if we will say there is overcrowding and the population is youthful, it means that the children, the youth that are in the correctional centers, that must be rehabilitated so that they can be productive citizens that can be leaders of the future, are in trouble. Now, if this is, there is corruption, there's gangsterism, it takes us back to the question of the integrated justice system, which again is led by the Department of Justice. And we as this Justice Committee are responsible for overseeing that, which means that ourselves as justice, we are also ready to ensure that the integrated justice system is working. And now, as you point out, if you are going to release people, you have amnesty, you are not solving anything, because you will release them, then release criminals into society and create chaos. And now, but the next day, the correctional services are going to be full again. Now, public hearing. What is it that the public is going to say which is not already in the court? So I think your report made me feel that I don't quite qualify to be in the position in which I am, because I cannot sit here and say I'm the chairperson of justice, I oversee correctional services, and then things are in this state. I really, out of my wits, out of my depth, I don't really know. But I'm eventually then just thank the committee secretary and the members of parliament who agreed to come here during this and listen to research. I don't think that you are an alarmist, but this is a serious matter that needs serious attention. I don't know what form of attention, but I can see failure of all of us. Political oversight, parliamentary oversight, so the only people that we can rely on is yourselves, and you have done your best. You have provided us with all the information, so that I hope that the honorable members also will not go into philosophy, because we don't need any philosophy. We need solutions. And what are the solutions that we must provide? We cannot have a situation like this in a state that we call a constitutional democracy, when the majority of the people there are children that we say are our future. So I think that I know you want to accomplish, but they will just frustrate us more than we are frustrated. I think we should open this to the honorable members. They must tell us, because we are part of the failure that has brought you here. And as I say, every time we are dealing with new legislation, legislation which is never implemented as well, but here are the real issues. Nandoni is Toyando. There's Nandoni Dam. There's a lot of water in Vembe area. The Mpopo is flowing there. There's no reason why there can't be water in the Mpopo. Why? What is the problem? Honorable Human, honorable self. I think we need to have everybody must hear what we are saying.
Okay.
Because we must really plead guilt.
Sherry, I without pleading guilty as such, I thank you very much, Judge and staff, for the good work that you do. What is the solution? I don't know. I've been saying for a long time that there's no need for a Department of Public Works holding funds for each and every department. There's no reason why the money that's given to Public Works, because Public Works anyway charges each department after it does. Why can't they just have a public works department in each and every department? Then you don't have to get public works before you fix anything. However, I think that that is something else that the chairperson can decide on, whether we should not really try and put for that person, because it has been there for a long time. Secondly, the question of independence, I've been saying that there is no point in having Justice Tabalala Sensei. You cannot respect your own force, because they will frustrate. So I think there should be money. The monetary case cannot be implemented as soon as possible. Even if it goes through in the meantime, there. As a specific amount specifically for this. Without having to say this, may I go out to the DPI. If, for example, the Parliament comes and says, we need so much money, and Parliament agrees, even if it goes through that, that money is specifically for that, the decision how it is used should be done by this. And that can be done, if I'm not mistaken. I think that can be done with immediate effect, or it can be done. That's the second thing that, you know, what is more painful here is that the judge, you probably know better than I do, that there are human rights violations in this prison. I'm sure if every prisoner decides to go and sue the government for this, some are raped there, some are still in the condition. I'm sure the state will be very bankrupt. Something has to be done, and I suggest very strongly, is that one, I don't know how you can do it, quickly, if there can be, I don't know whether you have already passed the budget, which will decide on, I don't know whether it's in that amount, the little amount, whether it can be done, that can be done quickly, just so that we divide, and so, you know, so much is what it is. Secondly, how do we make this independent in the sense that they have their own offices, which are part of that budget, separately, and such that they don't depend on the So those are the two things I think can assist. Said the Honorable Chair, I wish perhaps individual members in certain areas, it's important that they do go to these, for example, perhaps during our time when we have procedures to work, if we can also. I'm sure this particular report, I don't know whether all what the judge was talking about is in here. If it is not in here, please, Honorable Judge, can you please make this available? I'm sure it will be very helpful. It will help us even to confront the Department of Justice. Thank you very much.
Sorry, Chair, can I just to avoid, something I forgot. On the independence, I mentioned the litigation and I mentioned the response. But what Mr. Messer and others can later add more, I just wonder, there is an initiative to change our status from whatever we are now, as part of I didn't know, to what is in the public service environment called a government component. Those negotiations have been going on, starting last year when the litigation started. Mr. Messer and Brevis and others are getting involved in that. They can tell you more later. I think we should first hear the questions, but I just don't want to... So when we start looking at solutions, it is at a fairly advanced stage, but we don't have any idea as to when it will be finished. It's a long, cumbersome process, but it involves us. It involves the department, it involves the public service department, and it involves Treasury to make us a so-called government component. Then we will be outside DCS, if I understand it correctly. We will be located within the ministry or something like that. And we will have more of a separate budget. What we have to watch out there for is, frustrating as it may be to ask the commissioner for a laptop, but then we will not have anywhere else to ask except ourselves. So then we must have a budget, you know, which enables us to exist on our own. So I just want to mention that process is going on. You can hear more details about it. So it's not like we have to start. We have to look for more immediate solutions, but the bigger process is going on about independence.
As I said, we don't want to call government. But we have enough brains in this country who can sit overnight and come up with a thing as to what independence is. Why should it take more than a year to involve so many departments? Some of the people don't even know what we're talking about. we have enough brains in the country. If we agree that there's a problem and the solution is independent, I don't think that we need 2 years to be going through those things. Honorable Swart,
Chair, thank you so much, and thank you very much to the judge. I mean, for being so sobering presentation, and I guess there was nothing there that was particularly new. But when you put it all together, it looks that much more terrible. There are a couple of very specific things that I'd like to ask. First of all, when you say that the mandatory reporting system has collapsed, what does that actually mean? Because historically we've spent a lot of money in DCS on computer systems and getting those computer systems to speak to one another and so on and so forth. It horrifies me that you can't get a computer-generated report out of DCS. Secondly, it seems to me that one of the factors that's been brought about by a decrease in budgetary allocation is a decrease in the effectiveness of your inspections. And when I look to see that you've only effectively visited, I think it was 81 correctional centres in the cut space of the year, that's actually not really good enough for what needs to happen. And then when you look at the vacancies in the ICCVs, you've got 246 of them according to this report. There are 243 prisons. So there's basically more than one per prison. And when you think of a facility like maybe Coldsmall or Johannesburg, I mean, there's no way that a single ICCV can do justice to the inspecting job that the Act requires the person to do. So in a sense, what you are doing is you're setting yourself up for failure. Or somebody setting yourself up for failure. Thirdly, I am shocked to hear that you were denied access to facilities in KwaZulu-Natal by the Regional Commissioner. And I would like to know what action has been taken against him. He's not the first infraction that that particular gentleman has perpetrated. And one of the things that you didn't mention, although it's one of your focus areas, is mentally ill patients. And that is a source of great distress to me, that mentally ill people are held in prison where they're subject to further abuse merely because they are vulnerable, and they shouldn't be there in the first place. And I just wondered whether you had any solutions for that particular problem. And as far as overcrowding is concerned, I get onto my favorite hobby horse of alternative sentencing. I don't think we do nearly enough alternative sentencing in our justice system as a whole. And part of the reason for that was illustrated to us when we went a couple of years ago to Johannesburg, where we had a big meeting, including a whole lot of the magistrates. And we put it to the magistrate, why don't you give alternative sentencing, community service or whatever? They said they have no faith in community correction. And I just wondered whether you had any insights on the effectiveness of community correction as part of a strategy to minimize or to ameliorate the overcrowding of our correctional system.
Can I just
say
that you guys know who's going to respond here?
With the system has been done, are we really going to get a proper report of what has transpired in this system? Which means that those who are taking notes from both sides can we take full notes? Because we don't want to come back and repeat the same story. From here, we really need very part of it that captures the crisis situation that we see. Honorable Hall.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I just have two questions, really, in addition to what the Honorable Self has raised. The first is an explanation in respect of the situation of ICCV vacancies. The way I understand the two quarterly reports we have is that in the October to December period of last year, there was 20 interviews, no appointments, and then for January to March this year, no interviews and no appointments. And I think in addition to what he has said in respect of the coverage of facilities, I think we are also as an oversight body in need of an explanation. The budget was there, why these ICCV positions has not been filled. Then secondly, Chair, also in respect of the mandate of JICS and ACOR function, it would seem to me that also for the whole of this financial year in which we are in, it would seem that there has been no information forthcoming in respect of the use of force. And that is very worrying, firstly because, as we saw from the presentation by Mr. Masondu, that there has been an incremental increase over the last financial years in respect of the use of force. And then, therefore, as we sit here, we don't know what the current situation is. So, further, more detail in respect of how JICS went about to address this failure on the part of the department to give information would be helpful, so that if necessary, we as a committee could also engage with the Deputy Minister, even on an urgent basis, to see to that the real information is forthcoming. And then lastly, Chair, going back to your comments also in respect of the public hearings and so on, I would suggest that what we get, even if put in very diplomatic terms, is that while there is a good working relationship with the Deputy Minister and even the Minister, they remain sticky issues with DCS officials on a senior level. And rather than going out on public hearings, shouldn't we consider then having a triangle meeting in the future where we can ask the DCS along with JICS come and sit here and talk to what is preventing JICS from performing their functions in a proper manner? Surely that's more in line with our mandate as a portfolio committee. Thank you.
Honorable Mutapu, Honorable Lauzi, the first, Honorable Skosana, Honorable Mutapu, in that order.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's my first time to read the presentation.
Can you raise your voice?
I'm very much disturbed. So I wanted maybe to ask some clarification questions. First, I want to talk about the inmates in terms of your act. Does it include the housing clients who are in the holding cells in police station or not? And also the when you said some of the demanded detention facilities, do you need police cell or what? I just want to clarify from that. When you go to page 7, you said you reached your target of 33%, which you said it was 81 visits out of 243. So this is a tip of iceberg, because what we saw here is half of the territory of the city. What about the 67% of the think this institute is doing justice to the entire question of this issue of the challenges we face. So we can't be feeling that, no, we reach the target of 20%. We can't be this will need more explanation from the minister, both the political head. Why only 33% of protection? And we said it's a very deliberate position. On page 13, we talk about the 27 suicide people who died in our 22 suicide. And I wanted to know, you make some recommendations to remedy the causes to stop this suicide in our city, because either they hang themselves or whatever. What kind of recommendation are you doing, Mr. Tarek, to be followed to identify such death? The use of force on 2016, which is very much high in 2016-2017 to 724. What are the causes of this increasing of using of force? And this may be the consultant is coming to know what are the causes of this and what is obliging them to use force. Page 17, about cluster 6, about corruption, we said we received only one complaint of corruption. While there is a huge alarm in terms of the media, even working here about the corruption of corruption, people, inmates escaping from lawful custody in huge numbers in a very strong correctional facilities in Johannesburg, Sun City, there, where we had some corruptions were arrested about to corruption. So you only receive one. One from where? And maybe you get explanation from where this one complaint. Lastly, Chatterton, no, I want to talk about the budget again. The budget is so disturbing because you said you delayed the appointment of the permanent employees. What are the reasons for not appointing the permanent employees? Because it's affecting you only to 50%, not even 50%. It means it's going to lack human resources. While you have a budget, you don't fill those positions. When the money is there, what is the problem? And in terms of goods and services, you said you save by understanding the cost saving of 711,000 baht. In your institution where there is a lot of frustration like this, don't be proud of understanding. You must spend this money so that when we motivate more money to you, we must be able to understand that no, those people they even understand. They don't know what to do with this money. So it's disturbing to have this understanding in our entity. Lastly, it's about this man in Kwazan Natal who so big in such a way that he denied access and intimidated the official. And the judge, the inspecting judge, took his business as usual against him. So that next year he must also deny again because it's an untouchable. So what are the consequences laid down by you or recommendation by you about this big man who cannot even be suspended because he is a law on himself, because this institution was created mistakenly by us as parliament to go and do the work. Whoever stop it is stopping us, the government, to stop and consequences fail. Thank you, sir.
Honorable Skosana?
Yeah, no. Thanks, Honorable Chair. No, we welcome the presentation. Playing oversight of both justice and correctional system, and the workload on the side of justice, it becomes so high that we get sometimes we end up overlooking correctional service to a certain level. So I think we look to deliberately, I think, give ourselves time, I think, to look more into correctional service to attend to the particular thing. But I think we should thank the JIPS
Thank you very much, Honorable Skisani, Honorable
Mitako. Then start to, you know, about the person and the exist as an entity. So I humbly plead with this committee that we also the issue of official accommodation. And you said the honourable just said they are moving to the family, but see the other people that they a concern. And on the list of correctional center, I don't know whether on that page, the 37 of it, are you referring to Makazi in the book? Or it should be Makazi, no? And I very support you. The only thing you want to see that I'll learning correctional center, you go. Other reasons that have been sought in the Nobel to that challenge. But generally, I think we need to commend if we are trying under the circumstances. I think I don't know, they haven't mentioned them, but on the whole, managed to touch on the issue. So, thanks so much, Mr. Chief.
Judge, and your colleagues and hear from you.
Yes, thank you. I think we will start dealing with the CEO or on the other side. What I would like my colleagues to answer is investigations, maintaining patients, exactly what the mandatory reporting issue is, CCDs, the number, and et cetera. I can just tell police who asked the honourable member from the EFF, remand detention facilities in prisons fall under us, but not police holding cells. That falls under IPED. Then suicides, increase in force, corruption, complaints, finances and appointments, vacancies, etc., healthcare, all of that will be answered here. I have a few closing remarks, but just one point for correction, for clarification, that we have. When I say public hearings, perhaps I should leave the word public out. I don't mean that we ask the public to comment. You correctly said they won't have anything to tell us. I don't know whether the Act uses the word public hearings or hearings. What the Act, of course, is aimed at is if there is some violence somewhere and one cannot get the truth out of the department, you can have hearings, where people will actually give evidence under oath. When I mention hearings, I don't mean to invite the public. I mean to invite or subpoena every possible official from Public Works or DCS or whatever to tell us where the problem is. Whether we have it in public or not is another question. I suppose in the interest of transparency, we may have to do it in public, but my idea is not to invite the public. It is to get our hands to the people who always blame somebody else, and to call them one by one so that we can figure out what is going on. Whether we do it in public or not is a question to be answered later.
Now,
that's just for clarification. I will come back to a few closing remarks, but let me hand over to, especially on the staff situation and underspending and so on. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon, the Honorable Chairperson. Good afternoon to all the members. Thank you for the questions you've asked, and we've tried to the best of our ability to answer them to you. The first one is from our honourable member herself, who's questioned us on the issue of the management information systems that have collapsed. This system has collapsed since February this year to date. And it is an automated system that is driven by web, and we are patched into that web mail, where each correctional centre, head of the centre, is supposed to populate their statistics monthly, daily, weekly, annually, so that we then correlate that entire information, we unpack that analysis, and we analyze that data that's submitted. It's not functional. So what we did, we then written to the National Commissioner, we CC'd all the heads of centers, all the regional commissioners throughout the country, all nine of them, or eight of them, and informed them of a procedure that we want to put in place, which is a manual reporting system, in order for them to submit their statistics, so that we could then continue with our business. That is why you would find Honorable Member Horn says that there's some statistics that's the use of force is not accounted for totally. Yes, we do submit to that because we're not getting that information.
You say you contacted them, they have not come back to you.
2 days. We've written to them.
When?
We sent a communication around about 8th of March. 9th of March, the date is it. You've got the date.
But the judge says you have a good relationship with the minister and the deputy. Did you escalate the matter to the minister?
Perhaps very quickly.
Yes.
We can give you the minutiae and the details. We have an alternative system we've built in as well, and I think we can provide a little more comprehensive. But I'm going to say the problem doesn't exist. It is the IT problem, of course, which Mr. Lusser speaks about.
I'm telling you a question.
Sorry.
Will it not be escalated?
Has it been escalated to the minister and the deputy minister? This problem?
No, I don't think so it has. We have submitted it to the National Commissioner and the Regional Commissioner. That is where we do stop.
Yeah.
Don't you think it's a gross omission not to escalate to the people who have the ultimate authority?
I guess we will submit it on your request.
Okay, proceed.
All right. The decrease on the effectiveness of our inspections, specifically in relation to the 81 versus the 243 centres countrywide, is a limited research. We have only four inspectors, in fact five, for the entire country to conduct these assessments. Now, this is what JIGS has currently been placed with that limited resource. Now, what they did was, they took the 243 centres and divided it over its medium-term expenditure framework period, so that they could meet the achieved target of 100% within the three-year cycle. That's what gives birth to 81, 81, 81. That's the 33%, 33% up to 99. So we've decided, no, in this cycle, we're going to up this, because this is our core function. Our core function is inspection. And we need to restructure our establishment to meet this mandate of inspecting at least in this cycle 123, which breaks the back of 50% in this current cycle. So this is what we've tried to turn around as a part of our turnaround strategy, specifically in relation to inspection. Access denied in KZN, again, through the permission of the inspecting judge, a communication was submitted to all regional commissioners nationally, and a copy of which was submitted to the national commissioner informing him of unannounced visits, announced visits, our periodic visits, our inspections, all captured in this communication that we request their cooperation with regards to that access. We have that readily available and we can make that available.
Let me say, in the presence of the judge, it seems that when you meet obstacles, you don't escalate problems to the minister. And the minister is the one that is accountable to Parliament. Now, how do we then hold the ministers accountable when the whole thing becomes clerestory? Like the clerks would be running the whole thing, and the principals don't know, because they'll come to us and say, we are not our
system. What was the consequence?
Well, there was a telephonic conversation between myself and him, addressing the specific center where access was denied. And somehow or the other, he then succumbed to allowing us the next day access. But what the point we're trying to drive is that he must be informed of every single visit that occurs specifically in the KwaZulu-Natal area. Now that's what gave birth to us writing to all regional commissioners to inform them of our request, and specifically with regards to our mandate.
So it was not the regional
It was the regional commissioner.
Another one?
It The
judge wants to address that because it's upset the law on this himself.
There is a bit of a further history. Before Mr. Messer even became our CEO, when I first visited the Ebongweni Center, it was on the invitation of the Public Service Commission. That was very shortly after my appointment, and we were the guests of the Public Service Commission at Ebongweni. The regional commissioner was very friendly and very charming, and complained a lot about help that he did not get from DCS head office, locks and stuff like that. I did not know that there were tensions at that stage. Later on, I realized, or I was told repeatedly, that there were tensions involving the regional commissions, the commissioner at that stage, Commissioner Modise, etc. Then, beginning early last year, we wanted to appoint an ICCB. I did not even know about it. The people in our KZN region, they interviewed a person who had served 18 years of a long sentence for murder and armed robbery, and who was then out on parole, and I'm not sure whether his parole period was done or not, but for some reason our guys in the regional office thought they would appoint him. Then a huge protest came from the regional commissioner. So I said, let's go there, because this is an important thing for me, whether we can appoint ex-inmates. As it turned out, this was not a very good example. but so we visited Ebongweni again, and we met with the regional commissioner. The story about this particular, if you give me a minute or two, this particular inmate was there for murder and robbery, but the regional commissioner and others there had grave misgivings about him, which we eventually actually disappeared, so we did not appoint him. When I met with this ex-inmate, I also started to have misgivings about his own honesty. But the relevant facts are, this guy was out on parole, then somehow he ended up in Ebongweni, the Supermax facility. The story was, the concerns from the side of, the regional commissioner told us that it is completely against DCS policy to appoint any ex-inmates. So I said I would find that very strange because the whole system is based on rehabilitation. So I cannot understand that you can tell people, if you work hard and behave well, you will be rehabilitated, but just don't think we will ever give you a job. That for me, just on a logical level, we cannot even, we teach you to do carpentry and to become an electrician, but you will never do carpentry for us. So I asked the regional commissioner, can we get that policy? Because we had a policy, more or less, about whether we have an inmate in our service. Here in Cape Town and wherever else. So even for serious offences, armed robbery and stuff like that. So I asked for that policy, we never got it, and we have not been able to find a policy like that. But the fact that bothered me then is this man was out on parole. Then, according to the regional commissioner, he asked for permission from KZN to go from KZN to visit, to attend a funeral or whatever, somewhere in Gauteng, and he violated these parole conditions by going somewhere else. So they suspect him of all kinds of things, namely gun smuggling or something like that, which may or may not have been justified. But what puzzled me is, how does he end up in the Supermax facility ever when? Because we've been looking at their list of criteria, and it is very difficult to get into Ebongweni. You have to be a very serious escape risk, or you can't just be put in there immediately. You have to have a history of trouble, and it's a long process of getting in there. Not necessarily long, but the people we meet there are supposed to be serious gang leaders. It's people like Mate, George Cavell Thomas, whom I've spoken many times. So. What was more puzzling is he was released from Ebongweni after 5 days. Now, according to the inmate, he was released because of a court order. I asked him to provide us with the judgment of the court, which he promised and has never done. However, in the meeting with the regional commissioner, I said, but who decided that this person must go, if he's arrested now for breaking his parole, but that's quite a step away from going directly into the country's only supermax facility. We will talk later about the facilities there, but that means 23 hours a day solitary confinement, basically, which may or may not be necessary in some cases, but I cannot understand that a guy who was out on parole already go back there immediately. So the regional commissioner said he referred him there. I said, based on which of the criteria that we looked at yesterday, he said, I cannot remember, I will look at the file. I said, and do you know why he was released 5 days later? Nobody spends 5 days in Evel Green. People are there for years. It takes months to upgrade from one category to the next one. He said again, he will consult, he will look at the file and let us know. Our regional office and our national office have made many attempts to get this feedback, and we have simply been ignoring it. So part of what I'm considering, speaking for myself, in our consideration of the whole concept of supermax, is whether the criteria are applied properly and honestly. Because it doesn't help to tell people it's only the world's most violent, serious murderers and rapists to try to escape every day if you can put a guy in there because he violated parole conditions. Anyway, so, and then early this year, back to where we are now, Mr. we encountered this thing. I was a bit happy, and Mr. Misser and I have spoken about it, that we were perhaps too lenient. And after the, I fully appreciate the fact that the CEO spoke to him, that they tried to reach understanding, but I then insisted that we send out something to all the regional commissioners. Now, just let me just say what our basic tactic is. Our approach. For various reasons, we very seldom do unannounced visits. Mr. D'Souza can help. We announce when we are coming. For a number of reasons, firstly, courtesy, but secondly, it is good for us if they prepare for the visit, because it doesn't help to arrive there and the doctor is not there or the head of center or whatever. So there are certain things that they must do in advance, Mr. D'Souza knows. That's one of the reasons why we very seldom do unannounced visits, but we do have the right to do it. We just don't want to waste time by arriving on a day when, you know, the relevant people are not there. But we've done it when there was trouble at Helderström. Mr. D'Souza and I stopped there, we walked in, the person on duty said, we said, can we see the guy in hospital, the inmates who had been perhaps injured, or they said, no, we could not because they are very, very dangerous. So we said, no, but it's okay, we'll take the risk and see them anyway. So they were so dangerous that they could not lift their heads from the pillows because the one's jaw was broken, the other one had one arm and two legs broken and so on. But anyway, we don't do that often. So just as a matter of general courtesy and also for our efficiency. But to be denied, so we don't mind giving regional commissioners and area commissioners, say this is our plan, which Mr. did, there's nothing wrong with that. But if we don't feel like doing that, because of whatever reason, because we received a call from inside there or wherever, we can stop. So to make a long story short, this is not the only part where we have been concerned about a lack of cooperation. A number of documents. The last visit to Evan Gwenny, the head of center, if I remember correctly, was again very helpful. Again, we asked for certain documents. It was promised, and the next week when my research assistant, one of the new temporary positions here, called, the head of center said, no, he cannot give it to us anymore. And Mawapi is not here, but if I understand, he specifically said, because the regional commissioner said he should, I'm not quite sure about that. So that's we are on
the question was, why are matters not escalated to the political heads when you release?
Yeah, I suppose because we try to be kind of independent and not call the boss to be, but we will, if that's necessary, by the way, in that case, I'm not sure whether he could help.
Quite
frankly. Okay, let me be there. Thank you so much, Honorable Chair. The last one that Honorable South asked us on was about mentally ill inmates. We currently, through the Honorable Judge, have requested such exercise to be conducted by us. We have come to some figures which we've assimilated to our regional offices. They are sitting currently at 3,786 ill inmates within incarceration in total, which is inclusive of sentenced, unsentenced, and we can give you the breakdown. We have those figures, and we in the females and males. Beyond that, Mr. Chair, we have also discovered that 29 out of the 3,786 are declared state patients, which leaves us with 3,757 that still needs to be assessed or awaiting some form of assessment by some health professional to be accommodated in a facility that provides for such mental ill inmates. Maybe that covers that question.
Yes, I just wanted to find out these that have been declared.
The 29. The 29.
Yes, where are they? Are they in prison?
They are also in custody. Maybe we can give you that information.
Yeah, what I'm trying to say is that why want this information? Want us to make sure that the people have
It's noted, Mr. Chair, we'll make that information available, but maybe to just add a little bit more on this mental ill inmates. We are currently conducted an investigation. We've concluded a preliminary investigation. We are now concluding that investigation where one mental ill inmate murdered another mentally ill inmate in King William Sound. That is currently being with us. And we would make that available, that report available, as it materializes out of our unit.
Honorable,
sir,
I'm
more concerned with the people that I've already seen in some facilities where there's no space in the state mental hospital.
Yes.
These people are then declared a danger to themselves and to society.
Yeah.
Then they get incarcerated in a prison. Which they should never have. Now, how many of the 3,786 are those people?
Well, I'm sure we can make that also available.
I would like President D'Souza to come in. He regularly checks up on that.
Through the inspection.
Yeah, he regularly checks up on that, and there often seems to be a shortage of beds or whatever, but Mr. D'Souza has his finger on that.
But that is actually the 3,000.
These are people that are declared by a court to be a danger to themselves or to the community. Those are state patients.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Those are declared patients in terms of the mental health act.
And there's no state in the mental health.
There's no state.
That's what we've done.
May I just add my words to you, Judge and Chair? Provincial departments of health are the custodians of mental health institutions. I think this is also that's the first point I'm going to make. The second is if you look at page 71 of our annual report, we do refer to it as a challenge in the Eastern Cape with regard to those who are mentally ill. We talk about the need for collaboration and pressure basically on provincial departments of health. The facilities simply don't exist, or there are not sufficient beds in the field. In the Northern Cape, where it will confirm, there's a crisis in the Western Cape. And of course, it's an untenable situation. But once we identify, in conclusion, I'd say, those are mentally ill, declared state patients in terms of the Mental Health Care Act, it's a DCS frustration as well, I think. That they don't know what to do with them. They end up sometimes in the general population, in the hospital section. We can break down those figures more. With regard to, perhaps I just want to address one more question. When we, those figures, remember when we say mentally ill, we ask the initial question, and our annual report talks to it, to the nursing sister or the medical personnel, do they suffer from a mental illness? That on assessment, that might be a psychiatric nurse, maybe not a psychiatric nurse. So there are different degrees, this is what I'm trying to say, of mentally ill people. We try and differentiate between them. If you study, there's an appendices at the back of the annual report, where we specifically, in the 81 inspections that we did, we speak about the prevalent illnesses, where they are kept, etc. So that would assist the committee to to get a better sense of the context. I think I've addressed
it.
Thank you very much, Alan. I was sort of coming with a recommendation to DCF, if possible, in relation to the those who are declared state patients. That if it's possible that such can be released to the care of their families, and then they become day patients to this mental health institution. And then after, depending on their recuperation, then they can be taken back to prison. Of course, it will alleviate a lot of pain. Just currently, I've been told that one mental ill inmate was killed by another mental inmate. So to alleviate such things, if that can take place, then maybe it can resolve a lot of problems, especially on those who are declared state patients.
Judge, maybe we need to have the public hearing of the nature that you're proposing, because we cannot be hearing, we will be given statistics, the investigation will go on, we know that investigation go on, but we are not interested in investigations per se. We are interested in the solution to the problems, because now we're dealing with human beings that are suffering on a daily basis, and this matter needs an interdepartmental, integrated approach. I think maybe we should talk about this public hearing that we are talking about, where all role players, including ourselves, the politicians, will be there, and then if we are incapable of finding a solution, we must say so. But we cannot wait for another 6 months unless we have another disaster which is going to embarrass government and all of us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question on ICCB vacancies, this matter is, we are currently restructuring this entire ICCB program to meet to the new public management. This gave birth in 1998, and since then it continued in the organization. So these vacancies are being addressed. We have something like 50 vacancies that's going to be advertised very soon provincially across the country. The question also by Mr. Horn on the use of force, I've addressed this. This is also contained in our last quarter report, where we addressed this in our report, and it's also contained in this. The last one from Honorable Horn was the public hearing. The matter has been addressed, and we'll deal with it as we go forward. The questions by Honorable Maulazi was with the remand detentions. Judge has addressed that one. The inspections, that's 81 out of 243, I've already addressed you on it. Maybe just to again emphasize the limited resource there. We do not have the human capital. We only have 4 inspectors, but we are restructuring, as I've already alluded to earlier. The unnatural deaths, Judge has also tasked us most recently to look at these unnatural deaths, but just not only give us sums of the people that die in our places of incarceration. He's actually requested us to look at how can we get the magistracy involved in order for us to ascertain the outcome of that death? and to ensure the ultimate results in an inquest. So our regional managers have been tasked through regional management to ensure that all unnatural deaths within our places of incarceration are conducted to its fullest, and when there is an outcome of the cause of death or the establishment of the cause of death, so that we could account to our citizens of our country and family members. I think the corruption issue that will be addressed by my colleagues here, maybe the budget, the position of the underspending which was asked. This underspending was in fact in our last performance cycle. You would notice from that report, it's a 2016-2017 report. We are currently already going to publish our 2017-2018 report, and you would find immense progress that has been made with regards to our financial control. May I just add, Mr. Chair, we are now monitoring our budget monthly, where we account for every cent spent to our honourable judge on a monthly basis. We are also having procurement plans in place so that we have a spending trend and we could account for all monies allocated to us, to our honourable judge, and more especially to this committee. I think the question of the 33% asked by Honourable Swasana has also been addressed. The issue of his questions on public hearing, state facilities, I think that also been addressed by judge. Maybe lastly on the organogram, Mr. Chair. Member asked that there's 5 vacancies and 18 unfilled posts. We are through a process of restructuring, Mr. Chair. We are now identifying our core function, where we are now placing emphasis on inspections, because we are known as the inspecting judge's office, and we need to ensure that we assess as far as possible many, many centres over the performance cycle. So I'm going to quickly talk to you about our independence in terms of our submission of a business case, which we are going to share with you in time once our judge has given us permission to release it to the Interministerial Committee by the Minister of Justice and Corrections, the Minister of DPSA, the Minister of Treasury, and including portfolio. This will also promote our submission to ensure that JIGS takes the form of a government component in terms of Section 7A of
time frames.
We are going to submit, we are ready with our documents. We are ready with the documents. We just need judge to go through it, and we will then be submitting in due course. We've already consulted extensively, because this comes out of a feasibility study that has been signed off by our Honourable Minister, which gave the way for us to then decide on establishing the form of JIGS, ensuring its independence. We are ready. We hope that this matter will be put to rest before we move into the next administration.
No. We can wait for the next administration. Judges work from 2 o'clock in the morning. We don't want to be told about the new administration, because we need to know before we go back. Some of us here will want to stand for elections again. We can go and stand for elections to come to solve the problem that we should solve a long time ago. When can that be submitted to the judge so that we get an answer?
Well, we've already presented it to the judge this morning, but we just want to give you a little bit of time to go through it. I would say within a week or two, we would be in a position to then submit. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if colleagues want to add anything.
Honourable members, I guess you have been answered, and maybe in your concluding remarks, this public here, I think address us on that, because I think it's necessary, because I think the problem is that we work in silos. And because we work in silos, we don't deliver. And your public hearing, the way you look at it, it takes us time.
Okay. Firstly, the top of the iceberg reference, to be fair, what we present, the pictures here, etc., about facilities, we don't make that a general representation. These are examples. Now, to be fair, we did, since I started speaking for myself, realizing around April or so, that there is a serious problem, very serious, at some facilities. We have gone to some of the ones, like it's actually the only one, Elliottsdale, where we were told that things are very bad. By the way, we slept in Umtata, visited Elliottsdale the next morning, but our people from our George office visited the Umtata one, and after Elliottsdale, they said Umtata is worse. We were not, with Kupiru and I and those with the pictures, we're not in Umtata. So these are examples. I cannot say how representative. To some extent, we went to the place where the year is bad, but in the process, I picked up the stuff about the kitchen and Springbok and so on. People talk about it very generally. The officials themselves, not the inmates, the officials, but the officials on the level where they are dealing with these issues. So those are examples, but I think examples to some extent are good enough to at least spark the interest. But we don't have facts and figures there about, you know, dilapidation and kitchens and so on. Perhaps we have, I don't know. Something small on the budget, perhaps it was answered. For a year or two, around the time of my appointment and just after, we were often asked, before Mr. Rehm was with us, before Mr. Mrs., about underspending. One of the issues at that stage was in the minister's budget speech 2016, which was the first time I attended, he announced that JITS had been given 42 new positions. It took us more than a year to get those positions out of DTS. So because what they said is it's not our positions, it's theirs. Although the minister said it's ours, but they said they had to decide which ones they can do about. And Mr. Masonda was with me in several of those talks, and they will do it on their own. Because we cannot help them to decide what is crucial for them. We had meetings with Treasury, concepts like ring fencing our budget, etc., which I'm still not quite sure what it means, really, practically. Eventually, we got those positions. By the way, when I mentioned it to the minister said he got that information from the National Commission. So I think partly in the past, we underspent because of the fact that we could not appoint. I'm not sure if I'm correct, Eddie and so on, who actually put them aside. What I forgot to say when we talked about our budget, maybe my colleagues, the colleague here was actually talking specifically about about who are they to decide for us, the bread example. Yes. What I link to that, which I forgot to mention, I don't know, is we are struggling to get vehicles out of there. Vehicles are not the just performance in our budget.
We don't budget for it, it's actually budgeted by DTS.
Yes.
As a global.
What is just a very two sentences? How many people are we waiting for to hear any feedback from them, which we have not had since March?
Thank you, Judge. We have a list which we submitted to DCS right up to the National Commissioner, and this has been also discussed with the Deputy Minister last week. Out of this list, we have a 21 fleet allocated to us by DCS. Out of this 21 fleet, 11 vehicles are more than 120,000 kilometers. Of that 11, 8 of them are 256,000 kilometers on the odometer reading. Now, we have several engagements with the Office of the CFO and many representatives that forms part of the team that's supposed to be dealing with these fleets for us. Verbally, we promised that a million rand will be transferred to my budget in order for me to secure and replace at least 7 of these vehicles. This has been up to last week, Friday. Since Sunday, I've been here. So I'm still waiting for an official response from DCS. We were told that a memorandum has been submitted to the National Commissioner, and it is on his table for signature. Thank you.
Who are you dealing with in this DCS? Are you dealing with the regional,
national, and on the level of our CEO and Mr. Grievous, it's normally the chief financial officer, and then he delegates it to others whom that they need with. When I deal with them, it's in the presence of the minister and the national commissioner and the CFO, and then we hear a lot of promises, and then the next week it becomes more difficult when they have to.
That's why I said escalation of this matter to the principal is important.
We'll do that, Mr. Chair.
Okay, something I mentioned to you is a little bit outside, but we all know about the gang situation in the Western Cape, but I've discovered that it's not the worst. In places like Potchefstroom and Klerksdorp, there are this very serious gang activity involving around the mines and involving people of 17, 18, 19 years old. Gangs with names. No. They're not there. That's the Western Cape. There is the main one that we meet with would be the Crazy Dogs. And Mr. D'Souza will point out that when they recruit you at school level, you call the Crazy Puppy. And their main enemies. And their main enemies are the money lovers. And for those of you who understand Afrikaans, a name that I was amazed to find in the gang world of Potchefstroom, one of the main gangs is called the Stoutefunkak. Anyway, just to make it clear, some of these guys are awaiting trial dates. So I talk to them. I say to them, what are you waiting here for? No murder. Then they say, but they won't be convicted because the witnesses won't be able to identify them. So I said, but what do you do? Are you members? Yes, they're members. The enemies are or cars or whatever. And then I said, so what do you guys do? And the answer is straight face, we kill each other.
I will.
And when I asked, but why? They said, oh, because they kill us. And later it went on a little bit further to say they killed our ancestors. And when I asked now what happens if you are actually convicted, then they said, well, there is life in jail. And then the next answer is when I said, but what if you're killed? The response is simple, shrugging of the shoulders, saying, well, it's your time, it's your time. And now, I've never seen that level of what is it called?
Cynicism.
Yeah, but also, the authorities there, from what we were told, cannot even transport these people in the same police vehicle or the same vehicle to court. They have to arrange the food lines that they don't walk past each other. Because as soon as they put them in the same vehicle, the one will kill another one with a sharpened toothbrush. And it is something that is just how it is. They have no... Yeah, they sharpen their toothbrushes, etc. So it's the problem go wider. Assault on inmates, by inmates on officials, yes, I can't remember now exactly how it's reflected in our figures, but speaking for myself, that it's very important that we understand the situation of the officials as well. And I've said that to DCS very, very many times. Officials, as soon as I'm explaining to you what the things that happen, there's a lot of the full kind of tradition, is that the inmates prepare themselves according to Justice D'Souza, it is visible. We don't know how the officials don't see. They call it the ice bear outfit. They pad themselves, they are ready for war. When the official opens the door, the door, he is attacked with padlocks in the inner side of sock or in the end of a belt. The official runs away, serious injuries, head, etc. Cuts. The doors are open, the inmates start chasing the officials. And then when it becomes really serious is when the officials eventually get their reinforcements in the emergency support team, and that is when Rottweilers come in and shields that are switched on, etc. And then, of course, a measure of force may be necessary, but that is exactly where the lines are then blurred. And what psychologists tell us is that you must understand that some of these officials have seen our colleague's throat is slit right in front of him. Mm-hmm. So one can, we have great sympathy for that situation. So we don't, I'm not quite sure about the access, but my simple response to the answer is we are not only looking at the dignity of safety of inmates, also the officials. We cannot do without it. We cannot. What was mentioned, yes, the honourable member here who said why does DPW have to exist? Apparently we were told in Elliottville that apparently DCS does have a unit of people who are supposed to be qualified to do repairs and maintenance and so on. Not apart from the small budget. We spoke to one of them, they are qualified, and that particular gentleman said that, but they don't get any work. So we don't understand. That is why we're talking about hearings, to figure out this link. I'm coming back just now to the... Okay, let me say about the public hearings. From what I've heard, like I said, the idea is not to invite the public. The idea is to try to investigate systemic issues. In other words, not just why was this person killed last week, who is lying, who is telling the truth. That we can do, but systemic issues. Why is it happening? Where is the break in the link between who and who and who? So we were thinking of focusing on facilities, but perhaps we must talk separately by the chair and so on as to whether we can put something together, because you've been saying that maybe it goes wider. So systemic issues, to ask one person after the other, who, because everybody blames somebody else, and to try to follow that link as to why. And the same would apply, for example, to the mentally ill patients. Well, is it true that there are not enough beds? And why are they not? Whether we have the capacity, I don't know. We will have to talk about that.
Develop the capacity, develop a proposal.
Yeah.
We will take it to the relevant.
You don't get the money.
We have to.
And that's most important, the chair, the budgeting part of it and the terms of reference.
Yeah, but we should act first to see where that's together. But, Toyan, I just want to mention, in fairness, my story about no water was February last year. I don't know if it has improved, but that was the situation then. KwaZulu Regional Commissioner, I've spoken about, by the way, I thought of it now. I did raise it with the Minister. Yeah, one of our meetings with the minister and I met separately before meeting before the bigger group in more confidence, and I did mention it, and the answer was in confidence. I can assure you the answer was not to defend the regional commissioner, but the answer was kind of the atmosphere that I picked up here, that this is a difficult situation to deal with because I don't want to repeat the specific words. There are all kinds of rumors of the links of that commissioner with higher ranking people in the top structure, that it may even have to do with who is acting and who is not acting, etc. And that the acting commissioner before Mr. Fraser was appointed, that the acting commissioner was quite sort of incapable of doing very much because of the fact that he was not directly involved in any faction. A judge shouldn't speak like this. These are gossip stories and rumors, so I don't know. But the regional commissioner in KZN seems to be somebody here who is very relevant with. Alternative sentences, yes, that's perhaps a debate for another day. There are a number of facts there or issues. Whether the magistrate does have, I can't say whether community sentences really work or not. I don't have that kind of sociological and criminological feedback. What I do can say, and from my days as a judge in a trial court, one must remember the concept of equality before the law. I cannot yesterday send somebody to life for 20 years in prison, and today say, oh, let's try something new. Let's just sentence you to clean the toilet at the zoo. I'm deliberately oversimplifying now, there has to be some kind of parity. And I'm saying that also, the number of times, ladies and gentlemen, that I heard lawyers argue in a court, previous day I sentenced a black accused to a certain number of years for theft and fraud and whatever. The next day, the accused is a white middle-aged woman who stole money from her church over many months. And then the lawyer would say, let's try correctional supervision because she is not prison material. And that whole concept of prison material offended me. I don't know who is prison material. I'm not sure if it is determined by gender or race. For me, it is worse to steal from the church than to steal because of poverty. But again, even when she steals from the church, if it is to get money for, you know, medical treatment for her son who is dying of cancer or whatever, of course that is a relevant factor. But all I'm trying to say is the need, the desperate need for more innovative thinking around sentences is absolutely correct, but it must be balanced with the basics of equality before the law. It cannot, the life of an accused person, a convicted person, cannot depend on whether, it does, not the life, because you don't have death penalty sentences, but it cannot, your future, the rest of your life, cannot depend on whether this judge is in the mood to try something new, whereas the other judge is very, very conservative. So maybe we must arrange to speak to judges, maybe we must have some conference on that specifically. But again, you know, with our limited budget, we have to think about what falls more directly within our own. Yeah, to the Pele, I'm not sure if the reference to engineers from the United States was a deliberate exaggeration, or whether it was just engineers from Johannesburg, but it was very clear that those engineers are not present in Kimberley. So where the taxpayers would have to bring them from, I don't know, but what is clear is there is no automotive, and nobody in Kimberley can repair it. That's what we were told. Second, last point. The new statutory amendment. When we started these discussions about independence and perhaps becoming a government component, and the last time I attended those meetings, there seemed to be an atmosphere in the air that there is a mood or a trend towards separate pieces of legislation. In other words, to take parole or JITS out of the Correctional Services Act and give us our own statute. That seemed to come even from the main officials in DCS. What I understand now from Mr. and others is that the feeling now is that will take much longer. So now, if we become this government unit, we spoke about it this morning, it seems like amendments to our part absolutely necessary amendments are actually very minimal. So because, like I said, the Act already says an independent office under the, you know, so the financial arrangements are not in the Act. There may be something, there may be an interpretational and a symbolic dimension to it, namely you are right here in the middle of the Correctional Services Act, and that's where you belong, whereas an independent separate Act statute would symbolically make us more independent. But also perhaps, Chair, those of us who are professors and lawyers, when it comes to interpretation and when it comes to the overall meaning of the Act, etc., it may have an influence on our independence, whether we're in the Act or not. But we don't feel like protracting the process for another 3 years to wait for the new Act, if we can do with the present one. But there is another dimension to the amendments to the Act, which are somewhere being considered, and that is our powers and functions, and whether we should have so-called more muscle and more feet and so on. That is a debate that we have to work through carefully. We have not done it yet. I can just tell you that the NGOs want us to have powers to make binding orders or recommendations or whatever. But you know how complex the debate was around the public protector.
And I would, my view is that one should think about it very carefully, and that's just my personal view, because the more binding it is what you do, the more you will be taken on review, as we can see now in the public protective situation. If we say something which has a desperate effect or a devastating effect on the department because it's binding, then the slightest mistake in our report, if our figures don't add up, if our table, the total is wrong or whatever, people will argue in court that this report is irrational, et cetera, et cetera. So I think we must, and perhaps that's a discussion that we can also have because you are the legislature, I think we have to look very, very carefully about how binding, how final, different categories of recommendations, et cetera. So far, I'm confused with that, and I told the minister and the deputy minister that you can't add teeth by having the media talks by. We don't want to embarrass anybody. I promise the minister and the deputy minister that whenever we do, we will be very fair. We will give advance notice, but I did it. I did it 2 months after my appointment. But in July or June 2016, the Minister showed me a video, which was part of a much longer video, taken by CCTV cameras in Brunswick. So by the way, on the facilities, the CCTV cameras work almost no work.
They don't work.
Am I correct?
Yeah,
it is a huge coincidence if they do work, the CCTV cameras. They don't work. I don't know why. If they don't maintain them, it's the work. At some point in Elvestrum, when Mr. D'Souza and I visited, they said they did record, but they can't get the sequence right, so we won't be able to see what followed on which one. But in Brunsley, the CCTV cameras did work, and that was the investor's place about more than a year before my appointment. Nothing happened. I saw this video of the Rottweiler, historical events, and the stop by the inmates, and then the court comes in, Rottweiler drives the person out of the cell, lying on the floor. They beat him to death right there in the front of the camera. They beat him until he collapsed in the office of the head of center and died 2-3 days later in hospital. So for me, it is not assault, not culpable homicide, it's prima facie, it's clear, but... what did I want to say about that now? Why am I on this one about that? I don't know what I want to talk about. I can't remember. Yeah. Where the media comes in. We have been without a direction for a long time. So Mr. D'Souza and others told me that we are waiting for it. They promised their report. I wrote to everybody, from the minister down to the head of center, National Commission, and I did say that if we don't get your report by the end of, like I guess, in 2-3 weeks, we will have the media the next. Tuesday or whatever. Of course, I would hesitate to do that because, quite frankly, if that video went viral, nobody will ever be extradited from another country to a South African prison. So we wouldn't have liked to do it. By the end of the month, we did have the regional commissioner's report. It was in the Western Cape. I will end on a slightly humorous note. The regional commissioner came to me, he brought a report this day. He said that he first wanted to talk to me. And what he wanted to talk to me is how he could help JITS administratively to be much more efficient. So after he gave me that lesson, he left the report, of which the conclusion was that no one is to blame. Because their jobs are difficult to be. This is, am I correct? More or less in broad terms. So we said then, okay, we're going to have the seminar on torture and violence, which took place in November 2016. We invited the ministry, deputy minister would have come and then cancelled because of some event here. National commissioner came and spoke. The media asked him, so what about, we showed part of the video, but not the worst part. We just showed clips from it, not the worst part. Because again, we didn't want to be alarmist. Media asked a national commissioner. National commissioner said, I had already set aside that investigation, we can have a new one. So So they have a new one. I'm not exactly sure where that now leads. In the meantime, our concern is not only DPS, but Mr. Rada is following up where the head is the National Prosecuting Authority and the police. Because this is murder, as far as I'm concerned. This is murder. So the police generally seem to say that they are hesitant to go into prisons because it's sort of not their domain. And the National Prosecuting Authority, I'm not quite sure what they can say. Again, there are rumors, but I don't believe them.
Judge, we don't want you to be accused of having covered up anything. Since we started this term, we have never had a bill coming before us from the department to address matters in this area. Maybe in the light of what is coming out here, we need a kind of an audit as to where our legislative gaps, because the SMPs, we have the right to introduce private bills, so we need a legislative program from the department. But in addition to legislative programs, we want a report on interventions that can be embarked on immediately. And we think on the question of public hearings, that is something that must be embarked on, because I think our weakness as government, not only in the executive, ourselves in parliament, is to work in silos. Everyone wants to work alone, succeed alone, appear on television alone, because we want all this self-important, which does not help our people. So can we really allow you to go back and identify those things that, in your view, rightly or wrongly, must be done immediately, and then we will escalate them to where they have to be escalated to. Because we can't sit here and preside over a crisis, and when other people expose the crisis, and then we are going to say these are the enemies of the state or the enemies of government. Please. But thank you very much for being upfront. I think we should actually thank you, but also thank the Member of Parliament. You can see that they are all very concerned. Stayed on because this matter has concerned them. They also want a solution, and I don't think any one of them wants the next administration. Let the next administration deal with those things for the next administration. We are still here want to deal with the issues.
Thank you very much for coming. I did not realize even it's in the recess, otherwise we would have waited, but thank you very much. And we appreciate your concerns, and I want to be fair again. Of course, things could be worse. I don't know whether to call it a crisis or not. They asked me that on a TV interview. I don't like to use words like crisis and stuff like that, personally, for my, to be alarmist. But there are serious issues to be addressed. We are at your service, while being independent. But obviously, we would like to work with you, with the department, with the ministry, and not sit somewhere and get news media publicity without any
Thank you very much. Next month is Nelson Mandela's birthday. It is before the 18th of July, so we celebrate his birthday. Bring us a proposal as well. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, it's our 20th anniversary as well.
Yeah.
Our 20th birthday.
Sorry,
something serious I want to say. Because it's our 20th birthday. Mr. Messer and others came up with an idea of an international conference,
but we couldn't get money, so we wanted something.